It's a divisive issue turning classrooms into battlegrounds. Conservatives in the United States are ramping up their fight against books they believe are being used to mold young minds on race. But is it an attempt to fan a political firestorm in an election year? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Elizabeth Peranum in Doha. The murder of black man George Floyd by a white police officer brought a reckoning for racial injustice in the United States. Battle lines were drawn in the streets and corridors of political power. But now the fierce debate has moved into school, libraries and classrooms, where conservatives are waging war against literature they see as harmful and divisive. Shihab Ratanzi explains.
A battle is waging at school boards across the United States.
I'm sure we've got hundreds of people out there that would like to see those books before we burn them.
Books deemed to be sowing division in the classroom by Republican-controlled boards are being reviewed by authorities. Some are being removed from the shelves.
I don't know that any advocate who's been working on tracking or paying attention to the freedom to read can recall a time when the same book was removed or targeted with such vitriol and haste in so many places all over the country at once. And then the involvement of politicians, state legislatures, governors, this is categorically different. This is next level.
We're gonna embrace our parents, not ignore them.
The issue was key to the Republicans' retaking of the governorship of Virginia for the first time in 11 years, even after Donald Trump's popularity had slumped there last November. This was one of the adverts used by the victorious campaign.
When my son showed me his reading assignment, my heart sunk. It was some of the most explicit material you can imagine.
She's referring to Beloved by the Nobel Prize-winning author Toni Morrison, an account of American slavery that does contain some explicit scenes. Her son would have been 17 or 18 at the time of his assignment. It's all part of a wider cultural war against CRT, or critical race theory, an academic discipline using law, class, and gender to analyze racism in America. Contrary to the claims of right-wing politicians, though, it is not taught at school, but at universities. But some argue that discussing race at all, either in the school classroom or anywhere else, is itself a form of racism.
Nobody wants this crap. Okay, this is an elite-driven phenomenon.
Ibram X. Kendi's book, Stamped, was the second most targeted book for banning in the U.S. in 2020, according to the American Library Association.
No justice! No peace!
He traces the current mood of censorship to a backlash against the Black Lives Matter protests of 2020.
You had more people, particularly more white Americans, seeking to understand the history and really the presence of, you know, racism, the history of all the different groups that have formulated this country. Then you had this bitter attack to prevent people from learning their history, from understanding their history, from seeking to understand how it was that George Floyd was murdered in such a brutal way.
But the range of books being targeted go way beyond those analyzing race in U.S. society.
The selection suggests hostility to any consideration of gender, sexual identity, reproductive rights, or, in this case, just a simple acknowledgement that three African-American women were crucial to NASA in the 60s.
In fact, many of the lists circulating of objectionable books have not originated locally from concerned parents, but have been compiled by groups funded by national Republican Party donors.
It's pretty clear that one side of the political spectrum believes is a winning political issue.
An issue that Republicans hope will mobilize the suburban white electorate ahead of the upcoming midterm elections.
Well, let's bring in our guests. In Columbus, Ohio, is Treva Lindsay, Associate Professor of Women's, Gender and Sexuality Studies at The Ohio State University. She's also author of America Goddamn, Violence, Black Woman and the Struggle for Justice. In Doha, Maurice Jackson, Associate Professor in the History Department and African American Studies at Georgetown University. And in Atlanta, Georgia, we have Karen Walker, Republican strategist and founder of Black Conservatives for Truth. A very warm welcome to all of you. And I'm going to start with Treva Lindsay in Columbus, Ohio. Why are we seeing this movement against books on race now, against critical race theory? It's a theory that's been around for decades. It was developed in the 70s and 80s. So why has it become such a hot-button political issue now, and especially over the past year?
Thank you for asking that question. I think the first thing we have to reckon with is that in May 2020, amidst a global pandemic, we also saw one of the biggest and sustained uprisings in response to police brutality, in response to racism, in response to histories of injustice in this country and, frankly, throughout the globe. And I think it's important to put that into context because more people were reading about anti-racism, more people were looking to theories and studies and authors and scholars and organizers in recent memory than ever before to process what was happening, to process the killing of George Floyd, to process the killing of Breonna Taylor, to look at mass incarceration, targeted mass incarceration, to look at policing. And so you were seeing demands and you were seeing a groundswell of national debates and conversations about our history and our contemporary moment. And I think what we see in the pushback that we're feeling with the banning of books, with this attack suddenly on critical race theory, is the politicization further of those conversations and this retrenchment from the ideas that equality, equity, and justice matter as principled values for many of us. And so with that pushback, you're able to mobilize and galvanize a particular kind of rage against people of color, against this shifting conversation, against the debate. And in that, you see education has always played a very instrumental role in creating the politicization and divisiveness that we see in electoral politics at the state and national level. So whether that's school desegregation, curriculum, how we approach, or masking even in this moment, these issues become politicized and we start to see really stark contrast between the movement that we saw upstarting in 2020 and where we are now. It is a very combative, divisive, and frankly, caustic thing about discussing race in the United States in honest, candid, and forthright ways.
Mr. Jackson, do you agree with what Ms. Lindsay had to say, that the awareness, the appetite for awareness around racial history in America that we saw following the killing of George Floyd has led to this kind of pushback against that, and that that's what we're seeing being politicized now and playing out in classrooms, in high schools?
Yeah, well, I would agree, but I think it, all of this is not sudden. I think it goes back a long time. I think that what happens is that whenever it looks as though African Americans have made gains or trying to make gains or going to stand up more for injustice, and when at many times they have many white people who agree with them, that there's this great fear that somehow the country is going to be taken over. It's nothing new. It goes back to the birther theory against Mr. Obama. It goes back to the notion that somehow African-Americans haven't worked for what they've gone. But it goes back even longer. Understand this. History always has to tell the truth. After the Civil War, you had the 13th and 14th and 15th Amendments. Freed the slaves, gave blacks the right to vote, men the right to vote, due process. Some whites couldn't accept that. But to understand that as slavery ended, you have to explain why it ended. Mm-hmm. And as the slavery ended, you had to pass an amendment. The first amendments to the Constitution did not address the issues facing blacks. America had to live up to its cause. Therefore, it passed amendments. It's nothing new. America has always has to, if it dealt correctly, deal with the problems in the past. And if race became a problem, race certainly was a problem in the Civil War. Today, we see the issue of the passing of the Voting Rights Amendment, which historically has been passed every 10 years. The fight back against that because some people fear African-Americans having the right to vote and express their ideas. Lastly, you know, I wouldn't have thought 5 years ago that there would have been some form of justice in the trial of George Floyd. I wouldn't have thought 10 years ago there'd be some form of justice in Ms. Walker's Georgia around the question of Ahmaud Arbery. And here, white jurors admitted in many cases that racism had played a role in the killing of these young men. You see, so there's something deeper that they are trying. So it's not just the question of a critical race theory. That's a great part of it. It's the question of dealing with and having to accept that racism has been at the core of much of our existence.
Ms. Walker, Mr. Jackson was talking about how truth is essential to history, and you are the founder of Black Conservatives for Truth. So how are you seeing this whole debate around books on race, the banning of books, the banning of discussions on books on race playing out in the U.S.?
I think it really comes to the forefront because of all the social uprising that we've had in the last 2 years since the pandemic with George Floyd, with Ahmaud Arbery. When it comes to CRT theory and the banning of those type of books, it's important to really understand that CRT is not actually taught at this point in the classroom, in the elementary school, middle school, or high school. And the theory of CRT is somewhat complex and confusing. And so when you are in the society where you have all of this anger because of George Floyd and whatnot, and then you're introduced to CRT, which has been around since the 1960s, but most people have never heard of it. Most Black people had never heard of it. So you're already in a combative nature. And so now you're bringing forth CRT as a theory that says that our institutions in America is racist, that people tend to gravitate or to see, as you're saying, that people in America are racist simply because our institutions are. It brings a lot of confusion and it brings a lot of anger. It makes you feel more defensive. And I think that's what you're seeing here. But because, you know, you have these laws to ban CRT, but what difference is it going to make to ban something that's not even taught anyway?
But are any schools in America teaching that people are racist because institutions in America are racist? Treva Lindsay?
Yes, I think what we're seeing in education and what we're seeing in curriculum, what's interesting is that if I think about the education that I received growing up for a long time, I wasn't learning about slavery. I wasn't learning about the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. I wasn't learning in depth about the Jim Crow system. I wasn't learning about those things. And so seeing the incorporation of that in curricula, whether that's in high schools or thinking about in higher ed, in courses that students elect to take, not mandated to take, that you're learning about racism and its history, its roots, and its afterlives, the ways that it shows up in institutions, in systems, and in interpersonal interactions. I think it's important that we acknowledge when people are teaching about racism that they're talking about systemic prejudices, mm-hmm. institutions, as well as large-scale interpersonal dynamics. So when we see the killing of someone like Ahmaud Arbery, we see how interpersonal prejudices that are steeped in long histories of anti-Black racism manifest in murderous ways. And I think that it's important to look at theories like critical race theory, intersectionality, hard histories of race and racism in the United States, and other ways of knowing to understand these moments and to get us to a new point in this history. Because America, as Professor Jackson noted, has not lived up in any way to its ideals with regards to Black people in this country.
And Mr. Jackson, I want to ask you, are American high schools now doing a good enough job of teaching racial history? There is a report from the NGO, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which documents racial and racial attacks in the U.S. And there's a report from 2017 which shows that only 8% of students in American high schools can link slavery as one of the main, as the main cause of the American Civil War. So is American racial history, is slavery being taught well enough, given that there is a movement now by many conservatives who are saying that there's too much of it being taught in high schools?
You know, perhaps I'm not the best example. I teach in Washington, D.C. I've raised two children in Washington, D.C. They both went to school there. And in the curriculum in my city, in Washington, D.C., of course, the students learn in both the private and the public schools. I visit other schools, of course, some other places. The one problem is, however, is that if you look at, I read about a case of a principal in Texas who was teaching history, and he used the term critical race theory, and he was fired. I read the student of another white man somewhere in Tennessee who was just teaching history, and he used the terms. We can't get caught in that. Are students learning enough? I teach at the university level. Many students come there, and they really have not gotten a good grasp of the totality of American history, of world history, either in the sense of the role of women, of the role of minorities, and of others. Now, can that be right? Can that be right? Whether the textbooks, many textbooks do, there's a, we were just told, there are groups of teachers who are trying to write the textbooks. Every summer, there are teachers who will get together under the auspices of the National Endowment for the Arts and study textbooks and try to link textbooks and other things. I think textbooks, it's part of the problem, but we must have teacher training, mm-hmm. but also parents have to be in more involved in it. And then this whole question of denial, you know, going back to this, you know, there are whole schools of thought that deny that the civil rights was fought over slavery. What if fought over slavery? My God, what was it fought over? It was fought over the rights of one person to own another. And so the truth is still denied in that sense, but it's not just a question of race. It's the question of other things. Up until recently, the history of what happened in Vietnam has not come true. Up until recently, sometimes the role that Black people played in World War I and World War II in fighting to defend their own country has not come through. So there's a whole realm of things. Why we stick on the question of race is because white people, are fearful that someone wants to take something from them. All people want to do is seek the truth about what is happening in this country.
Ms. Walker, do you agree with that, that the people who are against the teaching of race and how it affects laws and American society are against it because they're afraid that Black people want to take something from them?
I don't think it's because they are afraid that someone wants to take something from them. I think that they may not be used to be feeling as though they are oppressed. So when you look at what Black people in America, and we experience prejudice and racial discrimination because we've dealt with it all our lives and other people, our families and whatnot, it's more so that it has been ingrained that this is what happens, that you have racism in this country. I do believe that if a white person feels that they are being racially discriminated, because that is not something that they normally face or deal with, they just have a harder time to adjust. I do believe that at some point, to correct racism is not through racist measures itself. You cannot correct racism with racist practices. And I think that's what is being seen. And I do believe that's what's being felt.
Sorry to interrupt, but I just want to be clear. What are the racist processes that you are referring to?
Well, so for example, I'll just share with you. Many years ago, my son, when he was in elementary school, he struggled in school. And so he had a speech therapist, a speech and reading therapist. And we knew the woman, our kids played together. She loved my son. So I went to class. I had to go to the school for a progress report on how he was doing. And she told me, she says, you know, your son is still progressing because he enunciates words a particular way. It's not grammatically correct, but because that we were told, because the African-American community speaks like that, we have been told by our school system not to mark it wrong. And I looked at her and I told her, you need to mark it wrong every time he pronounces a word incorrectly. Now, some people will look at that and say, you're just trying to help a particular demographic. That is institutional racism. Now, I do believe that institutional racism exists, but institutional racism also exist to help us when it actually sets us back. It hurts us. Because when you allow students to go through life thinking that they are educated in the way correctly, and they're really not, when they are actually challenged with it and actually called upon it, they're not used to that. So they look as though they're entitled.
I mean, I think that that's a whole nother subject in itself. I want to bring the discussion back. We don't have that much more time, and there's so much more to talk about. And I really want to focus, with the time we have, on what's happening in America this year. We cannot ignore the midterm elections, the fact that Republicans have won in two states where they weren't necessarily expected to, Virginia and I believe New Jersey. The man who won in Virginia recently, the governor, Glenn Youngkin, he campaigned a lot on the issue of not teaching children about race in schools. Are the Republicans, I'll put this to you, Ms. Lindsay, are the Republicans, do you think, using this issue to rally voters, especially this year?
Yes. I believe that what we're seeing is the mobilization of both white rage and white fragility. And I think this speaks to part of Dr. Jackson's point and looking at the historical arc. This is familiar territory. This, in effect, is not new. The pushbacks to certain gains and certain pushes by African Americans, by other minoritized groups, there's always a strike back. There's always a reaction to that. So when you have a moment where you're seeing words like anti-racist being used broadly and widely, you have news segments, you have shows, you have books, you have art installations and exhibits that are focusing and asking us to reckon with hard histories. How do you mobilize this sense of fragility or this fear of losing something or this fear of seeing as a perpetrator or an attacker or as racist, that you can mobilize the fear of being called a racist and making that more important than actually engaging in dismantling racist institutions? And you can mobilize that to the poll. You can also mobilize that through rage, this fury, this sense of loss that's coming when people are asking, maybe we should have culturally responsive education. Maybe we should be teaching about these difficult moments. Very recently, we had, in fact, it was yesterday, on International Holocaust Remembrance Day, a book called Mouse about the Holocaust was banned unanimously in Tennessee. So what does it mean that right. we're attempting to create a political base yes. by ignoring and saying that this does not really matter in this moment, that we don't have to study institutions and systems because it might make, in this instance, white parents and white children uncomfortable. And people are not asking parents yeah. about this.
And I just want to bring our other guests in because we have very little time left. And Mr. Jackson, is it dangerous to be yet again, you know, devising the electorate, polarizing it along racial lines after what's been happening over the last few years in America, going into an election year?
One gets sort of tired. Look, I'm an African-American man. I've raised a black son and a black daughter. No one is more fearful than a black man walking down the street in white America. No one is more fearful than walking in the street in Georgia or Minnesota or Kentucky. So people have to stop all this talking about white fear. Black people aren't going out attacking white people. You kind of handle them. But look, other things are coming up. And this is what's going to tell the story. The Supreme Court has agreed to listen to some aspects of the affirmative action rulings. President Biden has also gone on record to say he's going to appoint an African-American woman. And there are some qualified women out, black women out there. Yeah. Judge Jackson in the district court. Stacey Abrams' sister in Georgia. You see, this is going to be the tale because African-American women are so qualified.
I'm afraid that we have run out of time in this discussion. The clock really got away on us because it was so interesting. But I want to thank all of our guests today, Treva Lindsay, Maurice Jackson and Karen Walker. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Elizabeth Puranam, and the whole team here, bye for now.